You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In 2004, 25-year-old Thomas Young was deployed to Iraq, and just 5 days later, while he was traveling to Sadr City in an unarmored vehicle, he was shot and instantly paralyzed from the chest down. The story of the physical and emotional toil that his injuries have taken on his daily life and Mr. Young's subsequent decision to become an activist against the war is captured in a new documentary called Body of War. It's directed and produced by Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro, and I'm very pleased that it brings them and Mr. Young to the show today. Hello.
Hello, Leonard. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Leonard. Hi, Thomas.
Hi. Thank you for having me on today.
Thomas, what inspired you to enlist in the Army in the first place?
The attacks of September 11th and George Bush's subsequent regression into his Yale cheerleader days, trying to rally the country around to going to seek the evildoers out and bring them to justice.
So you want to go to Afghanistan?
So I wanted to go track down the people who were responsible. They're actually Afghanistan, Egypt, Libya, Pakistan, and 15 of the 19 hijackers were from Saudi Arabia, our closest ally in the Middle East, a country in which we have done absolutely nothing to retaliate for the attacks.
So what did you think when you were sent to Iraq, and what did you expect to find there?
Well, before I was sent there, as the drumbeat began to get louder for that, and I was against the idea from the get-go, and it led me to be very, very depressed and insubordinate, I guess is the word. I realized that I was in the Army just to do my job, and that I had enlisted and signed a contract, and I was going to fulfill that contract, but I was going to try to do it in the safest way possible. So I found a way to become the company clerk, thinking that that was going to be the safest way, since people told me I wasn't going to leave the base. Due to my current situation, I can now see that it is true when they say the best laid plans of mice and men often go astray.
Well, you, as you describe it in the film, you 5 days after you arrived in Iraq, you were in a truck that was not protected in any way, and you went down a street and people started shooting, and it was like fish in a barrel. Where were you wounded?
I was shot just above the left collarbone, and that bullet severed my spine at about the chest level, so I am paralyzed from the chest down. I cannot walk. I have impaired control of my bowel and bladder, along with some unfortunate male problems that they have so many new medicines for.
Phil, how did you meet Thomas?
I was in a conversation with Ralph Nader after the 04 election, on which campaign I did not work. I had been in 2000. And I went to see Ralph after that. And as we spoke, he said, I'd been asked to come to Walter Reed to meet a young man who's been injured, and would I like to go? And I said, I sure would. And that's when I met Thomas, standing at his bedside there with his mom, looking down at this very bony, underweight, totally medicated young man.
So this is fairly early in the story. Had you ever produced a film before this?
I certainly have never. No, I never produced. I've been a part of documentaries, and I've hosted documentaries, but no. This is my first effort to make a film.
And you don't appear in this film, even though yours is one of the most recognizable faces. Was that a decision from the start?
Well, it was for me, and it certainly developed that this film didn't need me.
You had Thomas and his mother.
I'm telling you, you know. And by the way, you know, maybe we'll sell a few more tickets if we can get more, tell people that I'm not in it.
Ellen, how did you get involved?
Phil called me one day out of the blue. I thought it was a crank call. I almost hung up on him when he mentioned a mutual friend. And so I realized he wasn't a crank caller. And we got down very quickly to the business of talking about the story. And my first question with every documentary that I embark on has to do with the characters. So I wanted to meet Thomas. After Phil met Thomas, he could not stop thinking about him. And after I met Thomas, I couldn't stop thinking about him. And after people see Body of War, they tell us they can't stop thinking about Thomas.
You're well known for your one-woman crew approach. Is that the way you made this film as well?
Well, we had two kinds of scenes. We had some very public scenes where I had a lot of support from other camera people and sound people. And then we had some very intimate scenes where I worked alone.
And that was that difficult for you, Thomas, having somebody that close to you all the time, following you into some of the most intimate things in your life?
Yeah, it was much easier with the one-person approach than the four or five people having access to me.
Sure.
I can tell you that much. But at first, yes, because, I've always been a guarded person at first, but once I got to know and actually like Ellen, it became easy Japanesey.
Well, you do document some really not shocking, but things that were hard for me to watch about the paralysis. I wonder about you. You put some pretty intimate details out there for the cameras.
Yeah, because I wanted people to see a side of this war that is not reported. I mean, you'll watch a 24-hour news channel, and you'll see coverage of what Britney Spears is doing, or any number of inane stories that really have nothing to do with news. At the bottom of the screen, you'll see five soldiers killed in an IED attack in southern Baghdad. When I think it should be the opposite, Britney Spears has custody problems should be at the bottom of the screen, where we have more coverage of the human the cost of what is going on in Iraq. I did an interview a few days ago with a military correspondent for a Monterey newspaper out in California, and she said that she was approached by a reader who said, "You write about military and veterans affairs. That stuff is so depressing. Can't you write about something else? I'm tired of reading about it." And this attitude that seems to have seeped into American culture, that they're tired of hearing about the war because they have no connection to it. And I decided that the best way to try to break through that was to show them all the warts and scars that go along with my daily life now.
My guests are Thomas Young, who's the subject of a film called Body of War, produced and directed by Phil Donahue, and Ellen Spiro. Ellen, the scenes from Thomas's life are juxtaposed against speeches made by a wide range of people in Congress as they debated the 2002 resolution. And let's listen to a clip from some of the speeches given by senators as they engaged in that debate.
Mrs. Feinstein.
Aye.
Mr. Fitzgerald.
Aye.
Mr. Frist.
Aye.
Saddam Hussein is a homicidal dictator who is addicted to weapons of mass destruction.
Saddam Hussein is cruel, repressive, evil.
Not since Hitler and not since Stalin have we seen so much evil.
Saddam is a 20th century Adolf Hitler.
I see the next Hitler in Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein possesses today an arsenal of weapons far, far more dangerous to the whole world than Hitler ever possessed.
Mr. Graham of Texas.
Aye.
Mr. Grassley.
Aye.
Mr. Gregg.
Aye.
What was stunning was how much they seemed to echo each other, whether they were Republicans or Democrats. We heard the Hitler group, but then you also have the smoking gun, the mushroom cloud, any number of other things that get repeated again and again. And this includes some of our most prominent Democrats, like John Kerry and Hillary Clinton. They sounded just like everybody else. We have heard a lot about President Bush's reasons for going to war, but why do you think so many of those legislators were convinced that it was the only option? Phil?
Well, I think it's important to put yourself back in October 2002. This is less than a year after the towers. Everybody wanted to bomb something. I mean, that's the way it looked to me. The fact is, we had millions of Americans out there trying to say, hey, wait a minute, hold it. But they, of course, were dismissed, totally marginalized. This president handed these talking points to these grown adult people in the House and the Senate, and they just read them. The smoking gun will become a mushroom cloud. The longer we wait, the more dangerous he becomes. You can feel the breathing. And this politics of fear worked.
Well,
it worked. And by the way, this vote, Leonard, as you know, was taken 3 weeks before an election. Imagine. This was a political vote that sent this entire nation right into the sword.
Now, there were some people who objected. Were they putting their political careers on the line? We see Senator Byrd, I think he didn't worry about whether he would lose an election. He was one of the rare opponents in the right. Senate. But you have a number of people in the House who opposed it. And
133 members of the House.
So that no. A lot of them. How many members of the Senate opposed it?
23.
The immortal 23.
One of them, only one of them, a Republican, Lincoln Chafee, who has since...
He was defeated.
He was defeated, and then he has switched parties. He's now supporting Barack Obama in the election, he told me, just a couple of weeks back.
Mm-hmm. He's got a book coming out, I believe. I thought that was one of the most stunning demonstrations of moral courage I'd ever seen. A Republican, all by himself, stood up to say no. Every major metropolitan newspaper in this country supported this war. Imagine. And it's important to remember how much courage it took to say no.
Well, were you surprised that Senator Byrd's objections didn't get more play in the media? You were on the air at the time, weren't you?
I was for a very brief, unhappy life at MSNBC. Senator Byrd did everything he could to bring, you know... I plead with the American people. Let your voice be heard. I mean, he was an oracle. The life of your son may depend upon it. The life of your daughter. To see this, and I had seen it live. And I was stunned by, first of all, his oratory, his respect for the Constitution, how everybody was turning his back to the Constitution. This was not a constitutional vote. Only Congress can declare war. Congress did not declare war in October 2002. They gave the president permission if he thought he had to. That way, they're covered if it goes wrong.
Now, you went to visit Senator Byrd, Thomas, didn't you? Because he had been one of the few to vote against it?
You there, Thomas?
I'm here. Getting back to the vote, there were also promises that it was going to be over in 6 months, that it would pay for itself with oil revenues. I believe there were a lot of senators who wanted to be on the winning side and, you know, didn't want to be wrong for fear of their, political careers as well.
Well, you visited Dianne Feinstein's office, and you got a very different response from her spokesman than you got from Senator Byrd.
Going to Dianne Feinstein's office was kind of a road to nowhere, but we met with her military affairs advisor, and he basically stonewalled us and said that she was not willing to vote for a timetable or a withdrawal or anything like that. Meeting with Senator Byrd was truly one of the hallmark moments of my life. Within 10 minutes of talking to him, I wanted to ask him to adopt me as a surrogate grandchild.
By the way, I was not permitted in Feinstein's office for that meeting. You see the man approaching Ellen, who's filming, and saying, this wasn't set up for this one. You're not. You can't.
And they didn't want it on the record?
She stared him down, and she said, wait a minute, we're here with this. You know, these are the people, and this is widespread on Capitol Hill. We have thousands of people working on Capitol Hill who feel that this would be a great job if you didn't have all these people coming in all the time. This is literally their attitude. Imagine, the guy recognized me and wouldn't let me in the I didn't fight it because, you know, I'm a coward. And Ellen went in there. Why do
She had the camera.
Sure.
My guests are Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro, the co-directors of a new film called Body of War, which opens tomorrow at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue across from Waverly Place. Also with us is the subject of the film, Thomas Young, and we will continue our conversation after this.
I speak for a man who gave for this land, took a bullet in the back for his pain, spilled his blood in the dirt and the dust, and he's come back to say.
Eddie Vedder singing a song that was written for the movie?
It was written for Thomas, yes.
And the movie features Thomas Young. It's called Body of War. It opens tomorrow at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue across from Waverly Place in Greenwich Village. And with us are Thomas Young, who is the subject of the film, along with Ellen Spiro and Phil Donahue, who directed and produced the film, and I guess we could say wrote it as well, although really as much as anything Thomas and his mother wrote the film.
Yeah.
Thomas, we see your stepfather in the film as well. He's a self-described ditto head, and he doesn't seem as sympathetic to your situation as everybody else seems to be. Has he remained way?
My stepfather is quite sympathetic towards my situation. He supports the war, and he's proud of me for standing up for what I believe in, but he in no way belittles my situation.
Well, we see your mother being feeling real sympathy for Cindy Sheehan and the sacrifice she made, and he said she didn't make any sacrifice. Her son made the sacrifice. That seemed to me to be rather unsympathetic to any parent who would feel just terrible at the loss of a child.
Well, that was his callous nature. I cannot explain him because I gave up trying to figure him out a while ago.
You want to add to that, Ellen?
Well, Thomas has an incredible family. You know, they're in Kansas City. They're in the heartland of America. His mother is one of the heroes of the film. We've got three heroes in this film: Robert Byrd, Thomas Young, and Thomas's mother, Kathy Smith. And Kathy, I think she's the main reason this family is so close. And you've got Red and Blue State in the same family. You've got Kathy and Thomas who've turned against this war and become outspoken activists against it. And you've got stepdad Mike, who is very much pro-Bush, pro-war. And you've got Thomas's brother, Nathan, who is also pro-war and pro-Bush, who gets deployed during the course of our story. And one of the things that makes Body of War different than other Iraq War documentaries is that it is a real human story, and it's a hero's journey. And we have three heroes on that journey. We've got Thomas, who goes from being addicted to morphine into this incredibly strong and powerful spokesperson against the war, and you got his mother, who's balancing these different opposing forces within her family, and you've got Robert Byrd, in spite of his physical frailties, who gives the audience hope that maybe things will change if we've got these people.
There's another dimension to the story, Thomas. You get married at the beginning, near the beginning of the film. How soon after you came back from Iraq did that take place?
Well, I was lying. I met her while I was on leave in shortly before Christmas leave in 2003, And I had known her when I was in high school, and I saw her again a week before I deployed, because I was back in town for my grandfather's funeral. And we wrote, and I spent a lot of money on calling cards, because that's another hidden gem to going over to Iraq, or at least back in 2004, I believe they've upgraded it. But I would buy a 1,500-minute phone card at the PX, the post exchange down there, and I'd go and use the AT&T calling center, and I would hear, "You have 1,300 minutes on your calling card." As soon as I made my first call, it took off 200 minutes, and I thought, "Wow!" So a couple hundred dollars later, I had, I guess, the beginnings of a relationship, and then I was shot and injured, and she would come and visit me in the hospital, and we moved in together shortly after I returned home from the hospital, and we're married in 2005,
I wanted to include her in the heroes, because I felt really sorry for both of you. And looking back on what you had expected and what happened, does your separation now seem inevitable?
I'd like to think not, but I think we were both at fault. I had my personal demons to exercise, and I didn't think she was quite ready for all of that, and we grew apart. And I hope that she finds whatever makes her happy.
My guests are Thomas Young, who's the subject of a film called Body of War that opens tomorrow at the IFC Center in Greenwich Village on Avenue of the Americas. Also here are Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro. This is the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC 93.9 and AM 820. Ellen, you mentioned that he was addicted to morphine. There are a number of... Were you?
I was not addicted to morphine. I was using it to take care of the pain, and I began to realize that, like any narcotic, you need to up the dose to have it achieve the same effect. And I did not want to become addicted to morphine, so I found a way to wean myself off of it.
A Vietnam vet you talked to at one point tells you that he received much better treatment for his injuries after that war. Do you think that that's what's happening with most of the vets? Because there was an article in the Times recently that talked about how the system is just overwhelmed. And today, John Edwards. Also, he sent a letter to the Times in which he said that the story is underreported, that they're a lot more injured than the press is aware of, because we're being sent double books are being kept on the injuries, and not all injuries are being counted as injuries. How long were you treated? Do you think you got all the rehabilitation you needed?
I did inpatient rehab treatment, well, inpatient hospitalization between Walter Reed and the rehab facility in St. Louis that I went to. I spent a grand total of 2.5 months in inpatient rehab, and then waited several months to get started on an outpatient treatment program, which was... spotty at times, and then now actually thanks to Ellen am seeking physical therapy treatment at an outside facility because the VA told me that they weren't going to be able to have a program that work on the spasticity problems that I am facing.
So, Ellen, you wound up becoming involved in the story as well, not just filming it. This is always a concern for documentarians, you know. How much do I just remain the observer, and how much do I also participate in the story?
It's not a concern for me. I mean, I believe if you're human, you get involved with people as you get to know them. And the kind of films that I make are, you know, tell stories in depth. You don't just fly in and fly out and get the story and say thank you. So, yeah, I became close to Thomas's family and to Thomas, and felt a responsibility to be empathetic and not to be a fly on the wall and not get involved.
And Phil, Thomas told that story about people not wanting to hear any more about the problems of returning vets, in the injured and the like. They want to hear happy stories. You had to deal with that in dealing with any number of major broadcast corporations. I'm sure they came to you every once in a while, way before there was an Iraq war, and said, Phil, can we have a few more happy stories this week?
Well, it is true. Certainly the protesting voice, the dissenting voice, is not good for business. And in 2002 and early 2003, just before the election, just before the invasion, you know, media did not want to feature any war voices. We weren't patriotic. We didn't support the troops. We wanted to sing Kumbaya. We were wimps. The marginalizing of the progressive voice was pretty total. I mean, we were told to shut up and sing, and millions of Americans did and remained silent while this president chipped away at the democracy and sent how many young people to Iraq, and we now have over 4,000 dead.
Well, many people in the press are now apologizing. And I assume that MSNBC has changed its attitude to some degree, because now they are doing very well with people like Keith Olbermann.
Keith Olbermann is a wonderful voice on the Shout shows. We're thrilled to have him. My hat is off for him. But, you know, it took over 4,000 dead Americans to get here, and over a million Iraqis. And by the way, 10 soldiers were killed in the last 2 days. I mean, we're sending more people to fall on the sword for what we all believe is a mistake. And worse, we have now the American people not really worrying about Iraq. It's not the number one issue anymore.
In fact, a February Pell Center study found that more people were following the story of Heath Ledger's death than the Iraqi war. But
there needs to be a correction made. We are not sending more people. We are sending the same people more.
That's true. And in fact, a recent study indicated that the return is where the worst problems seem to lie. But I'm sure that people ask you, Thomas, all the time, if we just withdraw from Iraq with none of the goals met, will you feel that your injuries have been in vain?
That's actually the first time I've been asked that question. We've come to a point. We're now in our sixth year. Victory has not been defined, or it's been redefined consistently and constantly. We established 18 benchmarks for the Iraqi government to meet. 4,000 dead Americans. They have met four of them. We have a majority of Iraqi citizens that say the American presence is making security a worse problem than if we were there. I don't support a vacuum cleaner type withdrawal from Iraq, because you have to have operational security to help, maintain some sort of stability, so there's no mass attack on American forces who are trying to leave. As one of the candidates on the trail says, we do have to be as careful getting out as we were careless getting in. But we can ill afford to lose any more American lives, or Iraqi lives for that matter, in an unjust war that we should have never gotten into. There has to be, there is a way out. We just have to have the ability to see it and find it.
Do you think if the draft were reinstated that the American public would be paying more attention?
Oh, that's a given. We had a recent protest on the fifth anniversary, and the numbers were very, very insubstantial, and I think that would increase drastically if the sons and daughters of privilege had to go instead of what we have now. We have a draft in place already. It's called a financial draft, and there are people who have the idea that the government's going to get in such a state that Army recruiting commercials might start with hungry, need a place to stay, join the military. And I don't want to get to that day. And if we had a draft, people would pay attention because they'd be forced to.
Well, if you hadn't been disabled, do you think that you'd be as committed in your activism against the war?
Oh, make no mistake. As I said, I joined after September 11th to go to Afghanistan. Had I been injured in Afghanistan, if I were paralyzed because of injuries I received going after Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, Pakistan, or anywhere else they were besides Iraq where they were not, there was no connection and there were no WMD. Had I been injured in Afghanistan, I'd shut up. There'd be no body of war. You would not be speaking to Ellen Phil or I about this documentary. I'd take my money from the government. I'd take my shoddy VA care, and I'd deal with it. I'd be upset that I was in a wheelchair, yeah. But I received these injuries in a war that was unjust and unnecessary. And on top of that, I know people who died. Friends of mine have died and received injuries that were unjust and unnecessary. Brothers and sisters of mine that I never knew, but because we are all green, when we get to basic training, we are told one simple statement. Almost everybody has told me, we're not black, we're not white, we're not male, we're not female, we're all green. And 4,000 of us have died, and 28,000 of us plus have been reported as seriously injured, not to mention those of us that have been psychiatrically injured. I will not stand, not only because I can't, but I will not sit idly by while this unjust and unnecessary war continues and more of my brothers and sisters come home injured or dead because of it.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Thomas Young, who is the subject of Body of War, new film from Phil Donahue and Ellen Spiro that opens tomorrow at the IFC Center on 6th Avenue. Thank you so much for being with us, all of you.
Thank you very much, Leonard. Don't forget, bodyofwar.com is our website. Thanks, Thomas. See you in a little while.
Thank you, and I'm sorry for yelling and raising my voice, but I'm passionate about this issue.
By the way, there's a link to that website on our show page at WNYC.org. Here's Eddie Vedder again. Today, with his mind he sends. Up next, harpsichord virtuoso Jane Chapman on how she's working to make her instrument relevant again for contemporary audiences.